to the poetry vlog. Today we have Gabby, and you don't know this, but we tried recording this 2 days ago,
and it
was just, it was horrible. We both had like double chins, and the lighting was weird, and neither of us could look at the camera, which I still struggle to do.
We were feeling shy.
That's a good way of putting it.
We had never really met before.
That's true. We'd never really met. We'd gone dancing.
We'd gone dancing together, but we'd never actually had a conversation.
Which I didn't even know you were going to be at.
Yeah,
so
surprise.
Patrick from Patrick and Pop Culture, he had a birthday party where we all went out dancing, and I was like, wait, we met on the internet. And we already scheduled this episode. But the point is, we're trying again.
Yes.
I'm going to post a video of us trying to find a spot for the camera. It's pretty funny. It's really funny. We didn't even realize it was not recording, and then we didn't realize it was recording. It's amusing, so you'll get a dip into our humor. So today we have our co-host, Mocha Kitty.
But that's a good name.
She's a ragdoll. She's a floppy baby. She's got no core strength, basically. And we'll see how long she hangs out with us. She's been pretty tolerant right now, because she usually prefers to stay on her perch.
Hi, my name is Gabrielle Bates. I write things, I draw things. Sometimes I write and draw things at the same time, and I call it poetry comics. I also help edit a few literary journals, and I work for Open Books, which is a poetry-only bookstore right here in Seattle.
It is, and I think it's one of the only ones.
It is.
It's the only one in Seattle, but one of the only ones in the country, right?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. And it's amazing. I send my students to the readings.
Aww,
like every
thanks
quarter.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for hosting them, because it's like a little bit more, it's my
not
students
on me.
Involved.
It's, yeah, I just help out.
You know, I was actually writing your bio for the Instagram post today. I was like, whoa, you're like actually connected to a lot of different things. So I have a question that I didn't ask last time. They don't know, now you know.
World premiere.
How do you juggle all of the different, like, editor of this, social media manager of this, Twitter person of this, like, you know what I mean? Like, you've got so many things going. How do you, and this is a question I think all poets would benefit from hearing an answer to, because I think there's this, like, confusion and fear, right, around how much you kind of gotta do to be in the poetry world almost.
Yeah.
So how do you do that?
Partly it's just my personality to do a lot of different things. It keeps me interested.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit of a commitment phobe, so I like to just, you know, have lots of things going on. But also it helps that everything is part-time, so I don't have a full-time job. It would be a lot harder to be involved in all these things if I did.
Okay.
So Open Books is part-time, all the editing work is part-time.
And you do editing for, it was Bull City Review, right?
So Bull City Press is the most recent one that has been added into the mix, and I love them so much. I do drawings for their Broadside series, which is in conjunction with their reading series. Oh, it's so cool.
Yeah.
I love what they do and the people who work there.
Yeah.
The most editing work I do is as the managing editor of the Seattle Review.
Yeah.
But I also read for Poetry Northwest.
Yeah.
And I'm the Twitter editor for Broadsided Press, which basically just means I run the Twitter feed.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that the longest.
Okay. And then I also asked her last time and didn't make the cut, and I'm going to make you do it again.
Oh, God.
Will you talk more about navigating Twitter as, like, poet and editor? Because people who have kept up with the show know that I'm learning social media kind of this year. Like, I was in my personal account stuff, which, you know, was, like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to, like, really engage on, like, all the platforms more actively. And as a poet, I find it really tricky.
Mm.
And, like, it's a different genre almost when it's poets. But you might disagree with that. So that's why I'm curious to you talk a little more about the social media stuff.
Yeah, I feel like everyone just finds their own way to do it. I think for me, I'm such a, my personality is very fangirlish in general. I consider it a strength of mine that I am not afraid to tell people when they're doing something that I think is awesome.
Yeah.
Or that I think they're particularly good at or whatever. So for me and poetry Twitter, it's usually that. It's usually just me being really excited.
Yeah.
I'm really blessed to have a lot of friends who are incredible poets.
Right.
Who I've met, you know, through school, through conferences, through things like Twitter.
Yeah.
And it's just so fun to celebrate their successes and share their work.
This is
that's
the,
my favorite
like,
part.
Upside of Twitter that I've been learning,
yeah.
actually, is because I feel like, you know, I associated Twitter before with, like, meanness.
Also like meanness. The trolls.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like the trolls, like people giving like very short like moments of shade basically to other people.
Yeah, yeah. And that does happen.
Yeah, and I still see that a lot, but I'm also realizing it can be a really cool space to like give people a pat on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've kind of made it one of my missions to be like, okay, like when I interact, I think some critique is necessary.
Yeah,
right?
Someone's
being
course.
Racist. Like, always. All of them racist already. But, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's also really nice to see people doing the stuff or doing the work and be like, hey, I see that you're doing that work.
Yes.
Like, way to go. And thanks for doing it.
Yeah. And writing and editing, all these things that poets are usually doing are such solitary acts. And I think Twitter is, you know, I didn't coin this, but it's like our water cooler. It's like where we get to come together and be like, here's what I'm reading.
Yeah.
You know, here's this great book. Hey, how's writing going for you today? That kind of stuff. So I like it in that connection.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then I want us to talk about BoJack Horseman, which now I'm saying it right. I had a period of time where
BoJack Horseman.
Jackman.
Yeah, you're really struggling.
I was
with
really
it.
Struggling. Yeah. With it. So I watched 3 episodes this morning. That's my level of expertise. I mean, it was truly research to have to watch Netflix while I made my breakfast.
Yeah,
but
it was
wonderful. A lot of work. But it's BoJack Horseman. I can say it now. It has entered my brain waves, and I get a little more what you're talking about now. Holy crap, it's a vaguely anxiety-inducing show for me.
I was, like, getting, like, I should have warned you of that. I mean, I told you it's dark. I told you it's about... Well, okay.
So give some background. Give some background to BoJack Horseman.
Yeah, so BoJack, the 5th season just came out, like, this last weekend, and so it's been on my mind a ton.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of the show. It follows, for those of you who don't know, a, like... self-destructive, depressed, washed-up, narcissistic sitcom actor navigating Hollywood, trying to, like, get back into the game, just kind of, like, messing up everything. Yeah, he's trying to navigate friendship and love and, you know, he's got all this family trauma going on and, so, yeah, it's a really dark, depressing, anxiety-inducing show.
Yeah.
But it's also freaking hilarious. I love the humor that they get mostly from the animal characters.
Yeah.
I just think it's so smart and so real. And it just does these great critiques. I don't know. I'm a big fan. I could talk about it a lot.
So, give an example a scene or a way in which you see it being really complex and how it uses... I think this, like, humor and darkness is a theme that's actually been coming up with almost all of my guests in some way. And inadvertently.
Okay.
Like, we did a Hannah Gadsby one.
Yeah,
with
I saw that.
Right? So, I'm, like, curious on how you see this, and we'll get into how it informs, like, poetry, comics, obviously,
But
if you could talk more about, like, an example of where that sort of dark humor is effective and what you see it doing.
Yeah, okay. So in the last recording we did, I talked about how I loved how BoJack does so many different things at once, often, you know, being humorous and being dark at the same time.
Yeah.
So there's this great scene in the new season, at a restaurant where Diane, who's a recurring woman character, is in the foreground and you're at the restaurant, like you're sitting across from her. And in the background to this side, there's a pig character eating a salad or something. And then on the other side of Diane's head, there's a human couple, like, eating a pig head.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people probably... like, didn't even notice that moment, but for me, that context that's going on in the background, while Diane is having, like, this really intense conversation, I believe with the character that she is going through a divorce with, and it's, like, a very messy, sad divorce.
Yeah.
But just having these different levels happening at the same time, just, like, makes my brain really excited, and invites me to go back and, like, watch the show again. Which I think, like, all great art, like a great poem, invites you to come back.
Right.
And look for things you may have missed the first round.
Right. So it creates a sort of, like, multi-layered meaning-making so yeah. to speak. So it's yeah. not quite as like, okay, I've digested this and I'm moving on to the next thing. It makes you sort of yeah. slow down.
Sure, yeah. There are layers.
So BoJack Horseman, I'm learning mm-hmm. to say it. It's a lot of the characters are like humanoid.
Yeah.
Or they're mm-hmm. like straight up another species. There's a lot of like yeah. jokes about the other species. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I think the agent's a cat and yeah. like it's an insult to be like call her catty. You know what I mean? And she's mm-hmm. like, don't say it. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Or like suddenly someone will have like a like cartoonish image of a horse and BoJack's like, that's offensive. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And so the animal studies part of me was like, this is interesting because it's calling out ways that by caricaturing people, you're actually like not allowing them access to like normative humanness, right? Which is like the complexity and individuality of living.
Yeah.
Right? But I was also curious about it for you because so much of your work, you deal with other species. Like, mm-hmm. I was looking at your mm-hmm. poetry comics and you have like the sort of humanoid thing going.
Yeah.
The one from Poetry Magazine or like yeah. you read in today's flash briefing, which will be yesterday is probably the time you'll see this. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah.
The Judas goat, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. can you talk more about, like, human and animal stuff? So moving yeah. from, like, BoJack into your own mm-hmm. work, like, mm-hmm. how you experience that?
Yeah, I've always been so obsessed with those blurred lines between yeah. the human and the animal. And, yeah, it comes up in my work again and again and again.
Yeah.
There's specifically a lot of domesticated animals in my yeah. work, so lots of goats, lots of horses, lots of sheep, yeah. lots of cows,
yep.
and some of that is just growing up in the South. Part of it is that when I was a kid, like maybe 8 years old, my mom bought an old slaughterhouse in downtown Birmingham, and
wow.
she wanted to convert it into lofts, and you know, we stayed there for a while. And so just like these animals, yeah, and ideas of slaughter and sacrifice are also recurring in my work
yeah.
too. So it's all related huh. to that for me personally.
Wait, can we pause on
sure.
the slaughterhouse?
Can we pause on the slaughterhouse?
Like,
yes. We can.
I am
yeah,
trying,
sure.
my brain is like trying to keep up with that because I just picture you moving into like a blood filled bath, basically, of like, and I'm like, oh, how did that happen?
Yeah, there was no blood yeah. left. But, I mean, it had been abandoned for a long time, so there was like dust this thick on the floors. But there were things that pop up in my work, like concrete floors that were like sagged for drains for
yeah.
the blood to go down, and these massive elevators that they would put cows onto. It was 5 stories. It was a really fascinating building that I like ran around in. It was like me and Alice in Wonderland,
wow.
like running around this. Yeah. so that space has become this sort of mythical space, even though it was very real for me. I think
yeah.
If you put a slaughterhouse in your poem, people are gonna read it metaphorically or figuratively, typically.
Yeah.
You know, yep. like, that doesn't sound
yep.
like
nope.
a normal
thing. That's true. That's very true.
So for me, it can be very literal. Like, in
yeah.
That poetry comic you just mentioned, it starts with, my first job was roller skating through the slaughterhouse, which people are like, oh, that's so, like, kind of whimsical. But, like, I actually roller skated.
Super dark.
Through the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
So
BoJack's
yeah.
coming into focus now.
Yeah. So
yeah.
I love that part of the show because the most human dynamics and struggles are often being portrayed through these animal characters, and I just find that so delicious to chew on.
Yeah.
What that means and how the show is able to talk about certain things that it might not be able to investigate as easily, maybe.
Yeah.
If the characters looked like human beings.
Right, which is interesting because then it also informs us how we're so steeped in this idea of like human here and everything else here.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, there's
right?
a total hierarchy.
Messes with, I didn't swear. It messes with like your usual human animal hierarchy brain,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
it's interesting because like Wicked's such a big Broadway musical, right? But did you ever read mm-hmm. the book?
I didn't, but I've heard
it's totally
it's
different. Like, and totally different specifically in that it's the main message of the book is about liberating all of the non-human animals that are being like classified as like,
oh wow,
not intelligent enough, and so they're like enslaved or they're free and cheap labor, and they're like speaking animals too.
Wow.
And so it's
There's like the professor sheep goat.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. It's like a whole thing. And then I'm thinking of you've probably read Ariana Raina's book, The Cow.
I haven't.
Really?
Oh my god, are you shaming me for not having read something?
No, sorry! That's like the worst culture thing ever.
I'm just kidding.
Shaming you at all.
No, I haven't read it.
I don't know if you'd like it, actually. It's totally not your style. Like, her style and your style are so different. Just doing totally different things. But it's on, like, slaughterhouse text. So she takes, like, slaughterhouse text and transcribes it into the book and then, like, alternates her own lyric poems. On like embodiment with the slaughterhouse text.
When you say slaughterhouse text, you mean like a manual for like how to slaughter an animal?
So the manuals and like the different signs throughout the slaughterhouses. And it's pretty intense. She does a lot of work with like the history of slaughterhouse industry and the Holocaust. Wow. So, because they have a very twinned history. So
transporting.
Right. So it's a very different like mode from like BoJack Horseman, right? Or like thinking about the sort of like whimsical but dark and horrible weird combo of like roller skating through a slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think in some ways I'm interested in yours because there is like a whimsical element to it where you wouldn't expect it to be. Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah, I think that contrast is really important. I mean, I admire work that is just dark, dark, dark.
Yeah.
But for me, I like to have a tension with a playfulness or, a lightness. I mean, a wit.
Yeah. So you have a poem for us that you're going to read, right?
Mm-hmm,
Do you want to read your poem first and then we go from there?
Sure. Yeah. I brought this poem to read. It was a version of it that's pretty close to the same version. It was published in The Shallow Ends, which is a wonderful online journal that I think is great. And
it's particularly well curated one too.
Yes. Yeah. Eloisa Mezqua is the editor. Oh. She runs the whole thing and she
I didn't know that.
Does such a great job.
Yeah. She has amazing
phenomenal
taste.
Job.
She's an example of a poet on Twitter where I follow her. When she reposts poems, I'm like, they're always good.
Yes. Yeah. Always good.
She also did a poem on boxing. Which
she's writing a whole book on it,
I think. The whole book, really?
Yeah, Fighting is Like a Wife, I believe, is the title.
The only book I've ever read of poems on boxing was by Joseph Rios. I actually did the flash briefing reading earlier this week.
Oh my gosh, do you know Gabrielle Calvacaresi's work?
Yes.
She has a boxing book.
A whole boxing book?
I think so.
What's it called?
We'll find it.
Totally tangential. It's just, I'd rather hear your poem now.
Yeah, I'll find it for you.
Cool, thanks.
Okay, lesson. This is how mud is made again. It would be on a riverbank, Cahaba, Coosa. Specific the place and thus the lilies. From the center, large white spiders, born dead, limbs first. Everything in its order but torqued. The way angel and human, all night by water, wrestle the space between sibling and lover. I want to pull back the pale, membranous corona of the watching. I want only its neck thrust under mine, lifting my head. A fight so alive, it can't be called from any mouth of reason by its so-called name. Thousands of the thinnest eggs conceived, swollen, swelling. A pair careens with limping mind among them until subtle movement in the dark, every ovary splits, bends with heaviness the stems, submerging whiteness in the water with their weight. Larger than all the lily's resemblances, its lesson. A body is stretched with every perception, renamed according to what it has survived. Cough of shoal grit, crusted thighs. Outward I bend at the sun is rising prod of your thumb into the joint of my hip. Lightless, gradually, no longer.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I'm going to link to the one that you already have published below in the description. But I wanted to talk about the form of the poem.
Yeah, yeah.
So something that didn't make the cut from the last episode is we talked a lot about one of the revisions that you made.
Yeah. Right?
Which was it went from tercets to couplets, single line, couplet, single line, then unrhymed couplet.
Mm-hmm.
And to break that down, tercet is just the three lines, extra space, three lines, extra space, right? And couplet is two lines, unrhymed, mean they don't rhyme at the end. So the people who are like, you just want poetry on me, now you know. But can you talk about using, like, how you got there? You know what I mean? Like, how you went from tercet to the single line in between. What drove that?
Yeah, I think in early drafts, it came out in tercets, in part because that is a safe stanzaic shape for me. It feels very sturdy. I'm into threes, so I think it sort of came out that way, and it just didn't feel quite right. It felt too stable for this poem. It wanted more of a limp to it. A destabilization maybe felt truer to the wrestling at the core of the poem, because I wanted it to not just be a poem where there was wrestling occurring, but I wanted the syntax to feel like it was wrestling with itself. And so having that less sturdy, less conventional stanza was helpful. And I think I was just, you know, I kept messing with it, and then this felt right.
Read the single lines, because I loved the conversation we had last time, and I want to share it with people watching.
Yeah, I was excited about that too, because I had never done it.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is just the single lines. Specific the place and thus the lilies, everything in its order but torqued, sibling and lover. I want to pull back the pale, lifting my head, a fight so alive, thousands of the thinnest eggs conceived, subtle movement in the dark, every ovary splits. Larger than all the lilies' resemblances, its lesson, cough of shoal grit, crusted thighs, lightless, gradually, no longer.
Yeah, I think that's so awesome.
Yeah, and speaking of things at once, like lots of things at once, I love it when a poem has poems within poems within poems.
Yeah, me too. Yep, like love Olio, it. Right?
Like, yes, freaking genius.
Which
you
pretty much
book.
Google, because he's won like every award on the planet for it. And
ooh,
right,
and watch
so.
Videos of him reading.
I also require that for my students, actually.
Yeah, because
he's
you
like
don't
a true
know.
Multimodal poet.
Yeah. You don't know that these poems, like, even if you realize it can be read across and it can be read down, you don't
like
necessarily realize, that
like,
you can read in any adjacent line. You
he's
can
a
jump.
That's really exciting.
Amazing.
It's like every poem is a complete puzzle for how many ways can you read this.
Yeah.
But something that I wanted to go back to with the single lines is. First of all, I remember you talking about, and I'd like us to talk again for share with others, the how you, what having single lines did, like the type of craft that it forces on you to have a single line hanging in solitary.
Yes.
Right? Because undergrad students, for instance, always avoid it. I've noticed. They tend to cram their lines as close together as possible, or they have their poems like kind of all over the page, but you don't see like these standout punctuated lines, you know? So you talk about that?
Yeah, there's nothing like isolating a line to bring all of its flaws out. You cannot get away with as much when you really isolate a line. And one of my favorite revision exercises to do, which I got from a professor, Andrew Feld, which I'm sure he got from someone else, is to, when you have a draft, take a blank piece of paper and like cover it up really one line at a time, so that you're forcing yourself to really look at what each line is doing as a unit.
Did you find that helps you with line breaks too? And line breaks for my non-poetry friends watching means like quite literally where you hit enter, where the line breaks into the next one.
Yeah, I like to think about where the line ends, where it begins and where it ends, and making that feel satisfying.
Because you have particularly effective line breaks.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah, you do. You definitely do.
That's really kind.
I really notice it. That, and this might be partly, and this can be a conversation for another time, actually, about like your, the way you put so much into each poem in the best way. I still think in the very best way. Like, screw everyone who told you otherwise.
I put so much into
it. No, I like that. That's like my jam. But I also remembered last time noticing, and it still stands out to me, that part of what makes the single lines work is that they have a certain logic to themselves. Mm. So the first several times they happen, until about half through the poem, there's something that cuts the line in half in some way. So the first one, specific the place, and thus the lilies. And then we have everything in its order, comma, but torqued, right? And then we have sibling and lover, period. I want to pull back the pale. We have lifting my head, period. A fight so alive. And then right in the middle, pretty much, right? We have thousands of the thinnest eggs conceived, which are also some of the, like, the longer, more mouthy words. Like, say it out loud to yourself if you're watching. Thousands of the thinnest eggs conceived. I'm not kidding. I make my poor students. I make them read out loud way too often.
No, but, like, that's great. It's great. You never really know it until you feel it.
Thousands of the thinnest is so yummy. Like, it's so good. And it suddenly have this, like, pulling out. And then we start having things break down a little bit even more. Like, you have subtle movement in the dark, comma, every ovary splits, comma, right? And then we have larger than all the lilies resemblances, comma, it's less than colon. We have cough of shoal grit, comma, crusted thighs, dash. And then, like, we have the last one, which is lightless, gradually no longer. And I think that, like, there's a way that your single lines are recreating the larger poem's function, which is this, like, limping forward. Right? And this sort of, like, torqued is actually the perfect word for it. And I think I could be wrong if I don't remember correctly, or if I remember correctly, but you didn't, like, think that each time with each individual line, right?
No, it wasn't, like, a conscious
And a lot of it's sound-based. So, like, for instance, if you say, like, cough of shoal grit, crusted thighs, my first thought isn't, what does that mean anyway? You know what I mean? Instead of, like, recreating that, like, crustiness and, like, the grittiness of it, you know?
When, and the sounds are so different than thousands of the thinnest eggs conceived. Like, that's when, that's when the mud is still, movable. It's still a little wet. It's, it's thick. It's, you know, it's viscous maybe. But then, cough of shoal grit, crusted thighs, those sounds are crunchier. They're drier.
And we have the comma and we have the dash. Like, they're kind of cut up into. I love it. I think it's it's really gorgeous.
Thank you. Thank you.
And let's relate it back. And let's check on time. Because last time I also went way over and I'm working on this. All right. So we'll start wrapping up soon. But I want you to bring it back to Poetry Comics and BoJack Horseman. So can you relate this stuff to those? At this time, if you're listening in on the podcast edition, if you go to our YouTube episode, we're showing one of Gabrielle Bates' own poetry comics, but you can also find it by searching her name on the Poetry Foundation. It will pop right up. So, talk about Poetry Comics and BoJack Horseman.
So in Poetry Comics, I'm thinking a lot about what information the visuals can provide and what information the text can provide and what sort of magic tension can they make together. And, you know, that's pretty obvious. I think the connections to an animated show, because there's, you have the text and the dialogue, and even in BoJack, a lot of really sneakily hidden written jokes everywhere.
I noticed that.
The store names are always amazing. But yeah, it's that dance between visual information and textual information.
And what does doing Poetry Comics do for you that, like, the non-Poetry Comics poetry?
Yeah, whatever they call into, that.
Like, yeah, what's a text? Thing. We're not going to go postmodern on you today. But, like, what does it do for you?
Yeah, so growing up, I always drew... I was drawing all the time. If you had asked my dad when I was a little kid, like, what sort of art will your child do for the rest of their life? He would have been like, she's going to be a visual artist, because I was always doing that. Sorry, I just bumped the microphone. Whoops. So when I decided to really focus on poetry and on creative writing, that drawing side of me just totally fell away. And then I saw that Poetry Comics existed thanks to Catherine Bresner and Bianca Stone, who create incredible work in that form. and I realized I was allowed to do that. It's so weird how we think in terms of permission like that until we see it done. We don't realize we are allowed to do it. Anyway, so I think I went home that night and just started banging out some poetry comics, like whatever that meant to me, and I've been making them ever since. I think they challenge me and they free me in different ways, because as you can maybe tell from the poem I read, even like my work does have a lot of images in it, and so poetry comics, I can provide the visual, so I don't have to write the visual. I can write something else that will be read against the visual.
And I really loved that, because a lot of like my students and friends are visual artists, and it feels like a way of saying like you don't have to think of yourself as a language magician to do poetry. I mean, visual art without text-based words are also just straight up poetry, don't get me wrong, but like there's an interplay that you can create, and I have a lot of students interested in that. So we have to wrap up.
Wrap it up. Wrap it all up.
Is there anything we didn't get to that you're like, Chelsea, I didn't get to say this thing?
Nah, I'm good.
All right, cool. You're so much better than me at like not rushing in with a comment. I'm always like, it's silent.
That's not how I roll.
No, it's awesome. I deeply admire it.
Leave the people wanting more. That's always smart. My motto.
Yeah. It probably works as well. That's very smart. I am the opposite. I'm like, let me give you this and then some and then some, and then you can cut out what you don't want. Anyway, thank you for joining the poetry vlog today. Thank you, Gabby.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for coming back.
Here in Chelsea's house.
You have no idea how generous she was, because she took the time to come out here, including my like wacky driving. Sidebar.
You're a great driver.
And then I asked her to come back and redo it because I messed it up. So really, thank you. That was really sweet.
You're
and generous.
So welcome. It's
I appreciate it.
A joy.
So for more on the poetry vlog, we have the website, chelseagrimmer.com, which will immediately direct you to the poetry vlog page now. And you'll find there all of the links as well as in the description below. So you can find the Twitter, which is just Chelsea Grimmer, the poetry vlog, which has underscores between the poetry and vlog, and then the podcast, which has its own section on the website where you can link to your various distributors, or you can just go to anchor.fm/thepoetryvlog and it'll show you all 10 distributors, because that's a thing that I'm learning. So follow the podcast version if you're like, why'd I have to watch? Well, you had to watch this one because poetry comics.
Yeah.
Of course, man. There's things that these things offer that the podcast doesn't. But on the podcast, you will also hear Gabby.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
I meant to say, like, Gabrielle.
Everyone lately has been writing my name as Grabby or Grabrielle. It must be, like, a really easy
slip. I'm going to make you feel better for a minute. Oh, I get Grimer all the time.
Grimer.
And
I accidentally typed your name in my phone as Grammer.
I've gotten that as well. So, Gabby's not that bad. That just makes you sound like you're the child of a bunch of gays. It's all right.
Well,
I'm going to call you by your real name now. Gabby. And you'll hear Gabby's flash briefing readings. It's your daily 2-minute poetry reading or less. And you'll get that on weekdays, Monday through Friday. I think we do me reading one of your poems, and then you reading two of your poems, basically. It's a lot of fun. And if you have Alexa, you can subscribe to them as flash briefings. So if you have an Alexa, you can in the morning say, Alexa, what's my poetry vlog flash briefing? And she'll just play you one of our poems.
So cool.
In our voice, not her creepy one, by the way. So,
that'd be funny to hear her do it, though.
We can have fun with that. I've seen it.
Okay.
It's interesting.
It's probably not as fun as I think it's going to be. It's probably painful.
It's both. Okay. It depends on your mood. All right. Anyway, thank you very much. Thanks again.
You're welcome.
Mocha says thank you. She's eating.
All right.
Bye,
everyone.